You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Manu Franklin, a GB canoe slalom athlete.
Yeah, I'm Joe Clark. I am the Olympic champion from Rio 2016.
I'm Joe Fraser, Team GB gymnast.
Hey, my name's Emma Wilson. I'm a windsurfer. I'm really happy to be selected for Team GB for Paris 2024.
This is Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast, covering the games all the time rather than once every 4 years. I'm John.
And I'm Michael, and we are en route for Paris, like hopefully some new British gymnastic champions.
Joe Fraser, Max Whitlock and Ondine Achampong were all winners at the weekend in Liverpool.
To hear that I am now one of those experienced gymnasts is just a bit weird.
We've a full roundup.
But Dame Laura Kenny will not be joining us in Paris. Britain's greatest female Olympian ever is retiring from track cycling.
I mean, 2012 changed my life, just in so many ways.
Emma Raducanu is now eligible for Team GB selection.
We will debate new majors for golf and tennis. And in our news from the games, there's more tennis, cycling, athletics, parachuting and climbing.
And stay in touch with us and see what we're all about anytime. Anything But Footy on social media. You can find us on most of the platforms out there or through the website, anythingbutfooty.com.
We're not Snapchatting yet. But that's coming soon.
Is that still a thing?
That's still a thing amongst people much younger than us. This is Anything But Footy, and this pod could have been called The Old and the New as we wave a fond farewell to Dame Laura. More on that coming up in a few moments' time. But first, Ondine Achampong and Joe Fraser have been crowned the best gymnasts in Britain, and both have taken a huge leap on the way to the Paris Olympics. Joe, who's been badly affected by injury for the past couple of years, including winning the Commonwealth gold medal in hometown of Birmingham whilst injured, came back with a brilliant all-round victory, particularly on the horizontal and the parallel bars, to clinch the British Championship title. Jake Jarman and Courtney Tullock were second and third, respectively. Now, Ondine won the women's title for the very first time in Olympic year, scoring 55.950 and consistently high-scored across all the disciplines. Now, the 20-year-old, who is from Hertfordshire, as all the best people are, is aiming for her first Olympic Games, having won the Commonwealth Team Gold and the World Team Silver over the past 2 years. She's also bagged three individual golds on the following day of these championships. And John has been speaking to her.
The British champion, an all-round British champion, and three other golds as well. What a weekend.
Yeah, it was a bit of a long weekend, actually, but it was very fun.
Talk us through it then, because the all-round was Saturday. Tell us about how that went for you.
I'd say the all-round went quite well. I started off on bars, which is my hardest piece. So to get that out of the way was quite good. And then I went on to my best piece, beam, which then went really well. I got a 14.7, which I was very surprised with. But and then I went to floor, and floor was all right. It was okay. And then vault, obviously, vault is one of the pieces that I find a lot easier than everything else. So to finish on vault was just It was good. Yeah, it was good, basically.
And what did it feel like to win that title?
It felt amazing, actually, because I feel like I've worked so hard these past few years, and sometimes things haven't gone as well as I've wanted them to go, especially with the amount of hard work that I've been putting in. But I feel like this weekend definitely showed how much I've put in.
And a special achievement as well, because I think it's 100 years of or the centenary of the first women's championship in gymnastics as well. So quite an honour.
Oh, is it actually? I feel like I saw an Instagram post about it, but then I didn't really like process that.
So you will forever be the 100-year winner. That's another good thing, isn't it?
I feel like that's really cool.
So you talked about it being a long weekend. You celebrate that success, but then you have to go and perform on the individual apparatus the next day. How do you get your mind focused on that?
I'd say I don't really let my mind come, would you say, unfocused from that? I feel like on Saturday I did all around, and then literally I got back to my hotel, had food, went to bed, then woke up, did apparatus finals, and then after that, that was when I was not as focused.
And how difficult, you mentioned when you did your round about how pleased you were with certain apparatus. You won gold in uneven bars, beam, where you retained your title, and floor. Is it frustrating when you can't just do the same? You have to perform again, effectively. And do you get frustrated that I wasn't quite as good as yesterday? Or, oh, no, actually, I was better.
Sometimes I feel like it is frustrating, like, especially when you don't do as well as before. Obviously, with beam, I got a whole more than a mark lower than the day before. But then my beam routine wasn't as good as the day before, which is then kind of a bit like, oh, maybe I should have, like, I wish I'd done it the same. But then, I don't know, having a second day is nice because you get extra scores on the table. So if one day hasn't gone as well, you've got a whole nother day to retry and get better.
I think afterwards you were quoted as saying, Ondine, that this was a massive achievement, particularly because it's Olympic year. What's the difference? Why is it so important?
I think because British was a designated selection event. So just the fact that I've done so well now at one of these events then shows the people who are going to select the team for Paris. Well, basically they take those scores and they look at them and they look at them all together, and then yeah, it will go towards that team. So hopefully.
A world silver medalist in the team. You're a Commonwealth gold medalist and a silver medalist individually as well. What would it mean, though, to be in the Olympics?
I feel like it would mean a lot. That's like one of the big goals. I feel like you've ticked off like Commonwealths, Europeans, Worlds, and that's another one of those goals that would be ticked off.
And all at a very young age. You're only 20 years of age at the moment. And what an achievement you've done. You mentioned the Worlds and the Commonwealths and bursting onto the scene. And you're actually, Ondine, one of the most experienced British gymnasts that we now have.
Yeah, I know. That sounds really weird to hear, because I feel like when I go to like GB squads and stuff, it used to be like, I was always the youngest one, the less experienced one, and even like people my age had gone to more like competitions than me and were classed as more experienced. So then to hear that I am now one of those experienced gymnasts is just a bit weird.
And we talked about the priority of the Olympics, because there's a place waiting for you, isn't there, in the University of Cal in California?
Yeah. I'm hopefully going, well, I will be going at the end of this year. I did defer for 2 years, I think, just to kind of go for Paris. And then as soon as Paris is over, I'm going straight away. Yeah.
And what will that bring to your sport? What will that bring to you as a gymnast being in America and training out there?
I feel like it's just a different experience than elite gymnastics. As much as I feel like NCAA gymnastics gives you things that elite gymnastics couldn't give you. Like, obviously, competing for how many weeks in a row, it will give you that consistency. And I don't know what else, but it's just another exciting challenge, I think.
And can you still also then maybe go to LA in 28? It's out there. You just stay out there.
Yeah, well, it's a possibility. It's not something that I've completely turned down.
But it's a long way away yet. Yeah. It's a long way away yet. Just quickly on your teammates, we mentioned there you're the most experienced one. And unfortunately, Alice Kinsella was injured over the weekend. And of course, Jessica Gadarova is coming back from injury. How are they both?
Well, I saw Alice in the back gym, like apparatus finals, and she seems fine. I don't really know what happened, but she seems okay. But Jess, she's in the gym now. She's just doing like just some basics as well as her rehab, because before she was just focused on like all her rehab stuff, just like strengthening her knee and everything. But now she's kind of got that rehab and she's doing gymnastic-y stuff as well. So which means she's in the gym with me now. So which is a lot better, because now I actually have people to train with.
Good to have her back.
Yeah.
Europeans are coming up. Would you want to take part in that? I mean, obviously it's down to selection, but would you want to go to the Europeans ahead of those Olympics?
I think I would want to go. I know it depends on like what the selection people, who they want on the team, basically, and what their strategy would be, because they can pick a team depending on what they want to achieve at the Europeans, basically. But I feel like I would want to go, especially as I'd be going to Cal at the end of the year, and it'd probably be like the last year, possibly.
And what's your dream when you get to Paris?
I'd only got as far as getting to the Olympics, and then I feel like a massive one would be to get into a beam final. Yeah, I feel like that's a massive goal.
Ondine, thank you so much for talking to Anything But Footy today. It's much appreciated. Good luck for the coming weeks, and hopefully we'll see you out in Paris.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Ondine Achampong. And as we heard her talking about injured Alice Kinsella, the defending British champion, and Jessica Gadarova, it does seem that Achampong and Kinsella will have a fight on their hands in the team championships in Paris. The Europeans, though, are first up next month, as we heard. We're not sure whether she'll go or not. And Team GB, we understand, will announce the gymnastics team in June. Now, some of the other headlines from the weekend in Liverpool: Max Whitlock could be in that Team GB team. He won his first British title since Olympic gold in Tokyo in the pommel horse, a massive 15.250, the score for him. And he said afterwards, "There are still areas I can improve, but I'm definitely on the right track." And there were other men's titles won by Jake Jarman, the floor, the vault and the horizontal bar, Joe Fraser in the parallel bars, and Harry Hepworth in the rings as well. So looking strong for British gymnastics, for men and women as well.
Looking forward to that team announcement in June. So, one of the greatest sporting talents our country has ever produced. A beacon of inspiration. They could be my words, but they're not. They are the words of Stephen Park, the performance director of British Cycling, talking about Dame Laura Kenny, the most successful British female Olympian ever, the first British woman to win gold medals at three successive Olympic Games. Laura Kenny, 5 Olympic gold medals, 7 world titles, a couple of Commonwealth golds, and I think it's 14 European titles. The cyclist who started at the Welwyn Wheelers has something to do with her mum, her dad and her sister, who won her first European title at 18 in 2010, went into the London 2012 Olympic Games with 3 world titles under her belt, has announced that she is stepping down from competitive cycling. And what a career. Mm. London 2012 will be, I think, the high watermark for many people. Certainly, I think, for Laura herself, judging by the conversations that we have had over the years. A double gold medalist with Danny Rowe and Joe Rousall, of course, broke the world record in the team pursuit and then won the Omnium. Did it all over again in Rio in 2016 alongside Rousall, Katie Archibald and Eleanor Barker. And the Omnium gold medal was awesome because she won 3 out of the 6 Omnium events. Of course, family life has taken over somewhat since the birth of Albie in 2017. Her second son, Monty, of course, with her husband, Jason Kenny, a legendary Olympian himself and now part of the coaching setup at British Cycling. So following the birth of Albie and Monty, of course, Dame Laura Kenny, who did come back for the Games in Tokyo after having Albie, winning that silver medal in the team pursuit and a pretty historic gold in the Madison alongside Katie Archibald as well, the first ever Olympic female champions in that event. And I know that Katie Archibald is a real historian of her sport and was super excited to be part of that history in that Madison, but yet has decided, having of course competed last time really as far as we're aware on the major stage in Birmingham at the Commonwealth Games in 2022, that Paris is not for her. And it's been an awesome career. It's been a fantastic career. She's been absolutely amazing. We'll speak more about her in a moment, but let's hear from her now. And this is a conversation that I had with her about how she started, about how important London 2012 was for her. And it was a chat that we had in the build-up to the Tokyo Olympic Games in 2021.
I mean, I guess competing down at Welwyn Garden City was the start of it. Obviously, I grew up in Hertfordshire, in Cheshunt, and I was there literally until I was 18. One thing led to another, and here I am now in Manchester.
And why cycling? What was the attraction in those early days?
So it was a family sport. My mum chose it as a form of losing weight, and really it was the only one that we actually did as a family. We used to go out for mountain bike rides on Saturdays around Lee Valley, and it's just time that, I don't know, I guess that we got to spend as a four, like me, my mum, my sister and my dad. And it was time that we couldn't do during the week because my dad worked. And so I really enjoyed it because, yeah, we were as a family.
And you really arrived to most people's consciousness in London at 2012. Was it inspiring then to be around the Lee Valley when you saw all that taking shape and knowing the Olympics were coming to where you grew up?
Oh, yeah, like I was part of something that... I mean, it was in Lee Valley that we did it, but I mean, I don't know who organised it, where they got 20 12-year-olds to come along and like raise a flag. And even to do it like way back then, I thought, wow, this is mad. Like the Olympics is coming home. Like it is literally in my home. And then, yeah, like you say, we had things. So Eastway obviously got demolished and then we got like a new track and just loads of things started to all of a sudden feel more real. And like you say, it really did feel like I was competing. I mean, I said it in an interview after 2012. I felt like I was in my back garden, and that is exactly what it felt like.
And now when you head home, do you ever go and look at the signs at the centre named after you?
I know, it's a bit weird. Like, it is still a bit weird. It's funny because Jason hadn't actually seen it, and then I took him down before my parents moved up here, and he pointed him out, and I thought, oh, yeah, like, it is weird. Of course there's signs with my name on it.
What did 2012 do for you, both in terms of profile, in terms of confidence? What did it change?
I mean, 2012 changed my life, just in so many ways. Obviously, I became more well-known, which obviously brought the sponsors. And it did give me confidence. Of course it did. I started to believe that actually I was quite good at this. And it's funny because people say, well, you're world champion before you went to 2012. Well, yeah, but you've got to step onto an Olympic stage. I cannot explain what that is like until you're there. And then come Rio, I did feel like I was a different athlete. I was more prepared because I'd had 2012 in my pocket.
And you do get quite worked up and ill, don't you, ahead of big events? Tell us.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm probably the most nervous Olympic champion you'll ever meet. And I stand by it. I've said it pretty much my whole career. And I don't mind being nervous. It's one of those things. It comes with it. As much as it does make me feel very, very ill beforehand.
What I love about that interview, Michael, is A, she's just so natural and so normal, which Dame Laura always was. I mean, she's got a leisure centre named after her in Hertfordshire. So, and you see, she talks about, you see signs on the road for it and stuff, but she's so down to earth. But she said that she changed, or 2012 changed my life. Now, look, I'm not comparing me and you with Dame Laura Kenny in other way, in any way, shape or form, but it changed our lives as well. And I feel it's a bit like when people say that their favourite band has split up, when the Beatles split up, when the Spice Girls split up, when Take That split up. There were people realising that, oh, this is a major part of my life that's come to an end. And so with Dame Laura kind of retiring, and I hate that word. And I said that to Yves Muirhead, didn't I? I was like, you're not retiring. You're just going to go and do something different, but you're not going to be track cycling anymore. It feels like we've been on the journey with her. 2012 was when we first met, and she obviously burst onto the scene and became an absolute superstar. Glasgow 2014, we both still have amazing pictures with her, and I can remember her telling us how ill she was, and she'd only eaten porridge before going and winning the gold medal. And that's where, of course, we met and really cemented working together. Rio 2016, she became an Olympic legend. We worked together without really working together because we weren't really allowed. And then Tokyo, as you say, she went, carried the flag, the Madison gold, the historical Madison gold with Katie Archibald. So it feels to me that we've been on that journey with her. We haven't been. She doesn't know who we are. But that's how I felt. And I felt really sad that it was coming to an end. Yesterday.
I was on the radio, as you know, on Talk Sport, an official Olympic broadcaster now. Reacting to that news when we got it yesterday morning, yesterday in terms of when we are recording now. And the phrase I used was the sands of time, because our 2012 sands of time are going, aren't they? We've had Mo Farah, Jess Ennis, Alistair Brownlee, Catherine Granger, Chris Hoy, Bradley Wiggins. You can go on with these names that we know that it's probably not much longer left now for Andy Murray, who is another one of those 2012 heroes. Tom Daley, a little bit younger than those. And a lot of people may be thinking that it might be his swan song in Paris. But, you know, we've heard on the grapevine he might actually be thinking about going for another Games, yeah, which would be absolutely remarkable, especially in a sport like diving. But those 2012 heroes are beginning to move off the stage, aren't they? I mean, we spoke there about Ondine Ashampong, and I know that you mentioned to her when you're having a chat, or what about Laura Kenny? And they're different generations. And that's what we need to remember now. We are 12 years on. We're a couple of Olympic cycles on from London 2012. And I think what we have got, though, is we've got those terrific images. We've got the most amazing TV pictures. We've got obviously wonderful memories from people that were there in and around the Games. Not necessarily just the people that were in the velodrome the night that she won the medals, but, you know, anyone that was in and around the park or was just in London at that time or just got caught up in it because maybe the torch relay, yeah, came close to their house, was on their street when it was in the build up to London 2012. It was a remarkable time. I'm not sure that when we look back at it now, maybe we would be able to do it again in quite the same way. I know we spoke, didn't we, about UK sport and their major events,
yes,
strategy. And in a way, I'm kind of relieved the Olympic Games isn't on there at the moment, because it all seemed to come together so well. I mean, it wasn't perfect. Let's not kid ourselves. There were issues. There always is in the build-up to the Olympics. But it all seemed to come together so well. I'm just not quite sure that we've got the appetite to do it again. I think we kind of need to leave it to a new generation, don't think any opening ceremony would come up short against what Danny Boyle was doing. It would probably rain. People would think, oh, well, last time the transport system worked, so I won't leave London this time, and all the roads would snarl up. I don't know. I just think it was a moment in time. It was a moment in time for those names like Mo and Jess and Catherine and Chris and Laura, of course. It was a moment in time for those of us that got to experience it, and it was a moment in time for the nation.
And the picture of Jason and Laura kissing at 2012, which was the first time we'd realised that they were together, and they are literally behind Posh Becks and their kids. And for the first time ever, having just watched the Beckham documentary on Netflix, for the first time ever, Posh and Becks weren't the most interesting person in that photograph. It is a stunning photo. I think Team GB released it on social media.
Yeah, and the other thing about some of those pictures, I think the one you're talking about was Horse Guards Parade, was it, when they went to watch the beach volleyball?
Yeah, and they're in a crowd, yeah.
Yeah, and there's pictures of Jason and Laura with now the Prince and Princess of Wales, who I actually think were definitely there. And it wasn't anyone using Photoshop at the time.
On a serious note, Dame Laura also played her part in changing the impression of cycling in this country. And it's become something that is normal and accepted. A, from a successful British cycling point of view, but also from people getting on their bikes, using the roads for cycling, and not having this whole anti-cycling agenda. I mean, there are some people who still have an anti-cycling agenda, but that's a different story. But it has changed the way, and she was part, as you mentioned, of Sir Chris Hoy, you know, Bradley Wiggins. She played her part in that as well. And look, from my point of view, she was a real competitor. She always wanted to win. You never thought she was going to win, and she always would come back and win. She was a winner, and honestly, an absolute legend.
Yeah, and I've just finished by reading what she said when she announced that she was retiring. She said, British cycling's been my second home since 2010. Not only has British cycling played a huge role in my professional career, it was also where I met my husband, Jason. They supported us into parenthood together, and for that, I couldn't be more grateful. I thank you. We did this together. She did say she will miss riding her bike, but I think that very personal statement is probably the most important word or the most important sentence that's been written about Laura Kenny over the last 48 hours. You're listening to Anything But Footy, the Olympic and Paralympic podcast. Stay with us as we round up the rest of the news from the Games en route to Paris 2024.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Anything But Footy. We're en route to the Paris Olympic Games, and we've talked with Ondine, and we've talked about Dame Laura, the old, the new. Well, what about Emma Raducanu? Because she could be on her way to the Paris Olympics. She is a US Open champion, as we know, but a lot of people really don't think that she is ever going to hit the heights of that again. I'm not one of those people. I think she will come back. She's still incredibly young, but she's in Great Britain's Billie Jean King Cup team. She's been picked by captain Anne Kiothavong, and it means when they take on France in the qualifiers in April in France, along with Katie Bolter, Harriet Dart and Heather Watson, Raducanu is in that squad, and that's the first time since she's been injured. We know she missed Wimbledon, the US Open last year because of injuries. It now means she can be selected for Team GB for the very first time. So we will see whether that happens. I'm not saying she is going to be there, but she has put herself in the Olympic window. And I think when you mentioned Andy Murray earlier on in the podcast, Michael, I think British tennis needs, I think Katie Bolter's doing a great job, world number 27 at the moment, but you need your big names in your Olympic competition. I never really will forget Cameron Norrie for not going to Tokyo and competing for Britain. And I find that a struggle when I then have to talk about him as a British tennis player. So we'll see whether Raducanu gets into that Olympic team. It comes as the LTA has confirmed that Manchester's AO Arena will again host a Davis Cup Finals group stage later this year. The World Cup of Tennis sees Britain take on three other nations from September the 10th to the 15th. And we will be talking more tennis to come before the end of the podcast.
In other news from the Games, athletics and Los Angeles 1984 legend Carl Lewis has been announced as the World Athletics Ambassador for the World Athletics Relays, which are less than 50 days away. The Bahamas 24 Relay Spectacular in Nassau will see teams qualifying for the Olympic Games with hundreds of the world's top sprinters competing from more than 50 countries. We will keep our eye on the 4x1 and the 4x4.
The Great British women's team will see European bronze medalist Abby Donnelly lead the team at the World Athletics Cross Country Championship at the end of next week in Belgrade. Now, she won both the London and Nottingham Cross Challenge fixtures this year in 2024, so she's in good form. And she'll be joined in Serbia by world 10,000 metre runner Jess Warner-Judd as well as other members of the team. European Cross under 23 champion Will Barnacote steps up for his first British senior moment at those championships, and Belgrade takes place on Saturday, March 30th, the World Athletics Cross Country Championships.
Let's return to cycling. British Cycling are sending a team of 29 to the first para cycling events of Paralympic year. They will be heading off to Rio this week. 11 current world champions will line up at the 2024 UCI Paratrack World Championships taking place from tomorrow. That's the 20th of March as we record through until the 24th. Some of the names to look out for. Three-time tandem title holders Sophie Unwin and her pilot Jenny Hull, favourites after winning in Glasgow last summer. Neil Fackey looks for his 20th. Whew. Yes, 20th world title alongside Matt Rotherham. Jody Cundy looks for speed ahead of what could be his eighth Paralympic Games this summer. Multiple world champions Finn Graham and Jaco van Gass will represent Great Britain in the C3 events.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on the cycling over the next few days on our social media as well, I'm sure. And staying with cycling, Rod Ellingworth has returned to British cycling as race director of the Tour of Britain events, something we talked about in a couple of episodes ago, that British cycling was going to stage the men's Tour of Britain and the women's Tour of Britain in 2024 for the first time. Now, he returns after being with Team Sky and Ineos Grenadiers, and he brings almost 15 years of experience working at the sport's biggest races to the role. He first joined British cycling in 2002 and integral in the creation of the Olympic Academy programme, something we talked about when we were discussing Dame Laura Kenny, providing the likes of Mark Cavendish, Geraint Thomason, Ed Clancy and many more the foundations for a long and successful career in the professional peloton.
Well, you know, sometimes an email arrives in your inbox and you think, this is good news.
Yeah.
Well, I am personally delighted by this because the British National Road Cycling Championships will return to the Tees Valley and North Yorkshire this summer, follows a very successful first national championships in the region in 2023, which saw Pfeiffer Georgie and Fred Wright being crowned national champions in Saltburn. Terrific support as well on the roads around Redcar and Cleveland and the Tees Valley in North Yorkshire for the championships. Now, they begin this year on Wednesday, the 19th of June, with the time trial events in North Yorkshire. Further details on the route to be published in due course. It's all part of a new partnership with the Tees Valley Combined Authority to grow cycling and tourism links in the region.
Right, some other news from the Games. We'll rattle through some of this because there's loads going on. Funnily enough, you'd think there's an Olympic Games coming up in 4.5 months' time. But she won gold in Rio with GB hockey. Now she's the president of England hockey. Alex Danson-Bennett, MBE, says it's a privilege to be announced as president, and England hockey say she will help guide the sport with her unparalleled expertise, leadership and passion.
Ryan Coble's booked a Paralympics GB place in Paris after winning the WSPS Shooting World Cup in New Delhi. He showcased some remarkable calmness and shooting skills to secure the gold medal. Says he now plans to work hard but smart and hopefully get to the top of the podium in Paris. Work hard and smart. That is a mantra for all of us.
Absolutely. Lorraine Brown has stepped down as head of performance from GB Climbing less than 5 months, as I say, before the Olympics. After 3 years in the role, she's made the difficult decision in order to prioritise her health and well-being and move back to Edinburgh for family reasons. We wish her well. John Garside, the British Mountaineering Council's head for sport and community development, will now take on the acting head role immediately.
You're listening to Anything But Footy, and John has something to get off his chest.
Look, tennis and golf. Yeah. Some Olympic fans remain a bit sniffy about it. It's a bit like football in this country, isn't it? I mean, we're not really sure. But look, we love it. You love golf in particular. I love tennis. And once every 4 years, there's always another chance to win something big. Andy Murray's won 2 gold medals. Novak Djokovic has never won it. He wants to go to Paris and try and change that this summer. But this weekend, we saw the Players' Championship in Sawgrass in golf and the culmination of the Indian Wells tournament in the Californian desert. But I'm not sure anyone would have known that. Scottie Scheffler won the Players in Florida on 20 under. Matt Fitzpatrick was 5th on 16 under. Surely a Paris pick for Team GB. While Wimbledon champion Carlos Alcaraz finally ended Aussie Open winner Jannik Sinner's unbeaten start to 2024 in the semis of Indian Wells. And then he beat Medvedev in the final. And world number one Iga Swiatek won the women's title. Now look. These are both Olympic sports, but that, as I say, is once every 4 years. So I really just wanted to say, because they're both, when you do hear something about Sawgrass or Indian Wells, they call it the fifth major. And tennis, both the men and women are playing in the Californian desert at the same time. It's very rare you get the ATP and WTA in the same place, apart from slams and apart from Indian Wells. And Sawgrass is an amazing golf course, and all the big players go there and play. It's the Players' Championship. So, if they're called the fifth majors, And these are sports that are flirting with Saudi Arabia and always rebuffing change. But as we saw with athletics the other week, sport has to innovate. It has to stay relevant. So if they call them the fifth majors, why don't we just make them the fifth majors? Why can't the ATP, WTA, and the PGA, and the European Tour, and LIV Golf, or whatever, all get together and go, right, we're going to create these fifth majors. It's the perfect time of the year. It's March. The Aussie Open was a few months ago. The French Open comes up in a couple of months. We've got the Masters to come in April. It just feels, it's a bit like what they say, isn't it? If it is black, then it's black. And if it is white, it is white. So if it is the fifth major, it's the fifth major, isn't it?
Well, I can hear a sharp intake of breath from golf clubs across the country. There's people at St Andrews at the moment that are reaching for some kind of implement to help pour some oxygen into their lungs following what you've just said. I mean, if there's two sports where tradition and history... Yeah. Are very much at the forefront. It's the two sports you just mentioned, isn't it? Golf and tennis. I would just say a couple of points on this. I think, one, in this country, we might be looking at it a little bit from a British point of view because we don't see the television coverage of these events in this country anymore. Yep. In the way that we used to. Certainly, I mean, if you look at terrestrial TV coverage. I mean, Sky do a terrific job, but if you look at the terrestrial TV coverage of golf now, I mean, it's very, very limited.
Yes.
It's amazing, actually, that the BBC could show 4 days of golf at the Olympics this summer, but they are very limited with what they can show from the Open. The Masters, of course, used to be one of the spring highlights. It's no longer one of the spring highlights. So I think a lot of these golfing tournaments just pass the casual golf fan by these days, and I think that's why we hold Wimbledon in such high esteem, because it's something that we get to see and it's plastered all over terrestrial TV. I think the French has lost a bit of its luster since it was lost to the BBC. Likewise, the Australian Open, we haven't ever seen the US Open for a long time on terrestrial TV. So I think from our point of view, it's maybe, and I agree with you, that these events didn't probably get the coverage, the prestige that perhaps they should have. And by calling them the fifth majors, maybe they would. But I think we have to look at a global perspective on these and look at what TV audiences were around the world for them. And the other thing I would say is that, in the same way that World Athletics are looking at changing up their calendar, so that there's always like a highlight at the end of the year, so that the calendar builds, there's a story to tell, there's a narrative, and that builds to an Olympics or a World Championship event. We don't have that, do we, with golf and tennis? We've kind of got sort of 3-4 little sort of peaks during the year. And I know certainly the men's tennis with the ATP event that they always have towards the end of the year. Likewise, golf always have a big event at the end of the year. But again, you know, they don't stand out, do they, as a climax to the season in quite the same way that, you know, football has a climax to the season, doesn't it? With the end of the Premier League and a whole flurry of finals. We know that the stories will be told by the middle of May as far as the domestic football season is concerned, and we don't have that, do we, with a lot of the other sports at the minute. Athletics are looking to try and do that, golf and tennis at the minute. Do they need to do it? Do they feel like they need to do it? Probably not right now.
Yeah, I understand the storytelling part of it. I just think that certainly with Indian Wells, it's a 2-week tournament and you can grab the attention for 2 weeks like the other majors, and for a year I don't feel is enough, because, yeah, how many people are invested in the ATP and the WTA? And that is an issue, as athletics are finding, that on a weekly basis from the Diamond League point, how many people are invested in it? It's still the biggest Olympic sport, but how many people are invested in it week in, week out? And I think that's the same with tennis and golf. But I think the other argument, of course, would be that both those events that I mentioned, Sawgrass and Indian Wells, are both in America. So yeah. you're not then spreading the word around the world. But I just feel that America is big enough to be able to hold these events, and to have the US Open in September. If you had Indian Wells in March, it would be a nice, you know, it's far enough away. It's the other side of America as well, you know, being California rather than New York and stuff. For me, it's a no-brainer, but I also can totally understand, as you said, from the heritage and traditional point of view. But we will see. I think that, and we've said this so many times, that sport does need to start making itself relevant to people more and more. And if you can get bigger events, and for 2 weeks, everybody who is a tennis fan is watching Indian Wells, and you can make that and try and get other people involved in that as well, because we know who the star players are, then that would be beneficial for the sport, rather than just saying, okay, well, we'll just stick to our four that we've always stuck to. And, you know, Michael and I, we said this at the start, we've been doing this for a long time, and it's never changed. They've never changed. They're still the same majors. When you and I were growing up, we're exactly the same now. The Olympics isn't the same as it was, is it? And that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, well, you can have your say, of course, if you agree with John or disagree with John. You can always find us on one of your favourite social media platforms. You can always send us a message via our website, that is anythingbutfooty.com. And I would recommend you go and follow us across Instagram, across X, across Facebook. We're back on YouTube, aren't we? You can even find us on TikTok as well. We'll have all the very latest build-up, of course, to the Olympic and the Paralympic Games as we are en route to Paris. And you can find our latest blogs and our 2024 sporting calendar. It's busy. That's all online at anythingbutfooty.com. So do stay with us. We are en route to Paris 2024 on the Olympic and the Paralympic Games.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.